right or wrong, and where we can agree or disagree about movies, TV, and other assorted media, because it's all subjective. My name is Ray. Thank you so much for joining me. The last time I was here, I recorded a bit of a rant. I was in rant mode, speaking about Superman gatekeepers. Yeah, had a bone to pick. Had a few things that I needed to get off my chest. And I will be completely honest with you, I wasn't completely certain how everyone was going to respond to that particular episode. I had been teasing it for a while, saying that I had had something waiting for the Superman gatekeepers in the wake of the release of Lois, or Superman and Lois on the CW. And I really didn't know, you know, I had something for everyone, I felt, like all the important parties involved in the Superman discourse. And I really wasn't sure how people were going to respond to it overall. I figured that there would be a lot of people that would agree with some of it, and there'd be a lot of people that wouldn't agree with other parts of it. But to be honest, since I've released that episode, I think it's like one of my most popular solo episodes. I have gotten just a great amount of positive feedback for my most recent episode, We Need to Talk About Superman. Thank you to all of you who enjoyed it, and just about everyone I've seen has, like, pretty much agreed with everything that I had to say, which that's comforting. It is comforting, because seriously, like, we're all of us that are DC fans, we're all part of the Superman discourse, and we see what it is, and, you know, there are parts of it that we enjoy, and there are parts of it that just absolutely annoys the hell out of us. And so that's what that was, and I feel like I left no stone unturned with respect to my feelings on that. But thank you to everybody that gave me the awesome feedback on that episode. I'm already getting requests on for another rant episode, which quite honestly might happen. It may very well happen with respect to the other franchise, if you will, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and just a perception of some things going on there and how the audience and other writers tend to treat any and everything that comes out of that franchise. But you know what? That's for another time, because as I come here today on this particular episode, I'm still in DC mode. I am. I'm still in DC mode. And look, let's be honest. It's March. Okay, we are T-minus 2 weeks away. Seriously, 2 weeks. 2 weeks to the day. I'm recording this on Thursday, not April, my goodness. Thursday, March 4th. We are 2 weeks from today. We will get the release of the year, the comic book movie release of the year, Zack Snyder's Justice League. And let's be clear, and I this really isn't, I mean, I haven't had a ton of debates on this, but I did make one comment about it a couple of days ago on Twitter, and there was, like, some resistance to it, you know, just talking about how big the event was, and it was really talking about the hype and the marketing for the movie, and, like, how it's really ramped up, and how others are really joining the fray. You know, you got the Critics Association that's about to present Zack Snyder with an award. What? The Hollywood Critics Association giving Zack Snyder an award? You know, I am entertaining the notion of watching that presentation just to see how many of them have to grit their teeth and bite their tongue as they say, congratulations to Zack Snyder, even though we hate your guts and we've spent the last 4 or 5 years absolutely railing on you in every publication and tweet and post on social media and YouTube video that we could possibly find. I want to see how many of them have to, like, grin and bear it, right? And, you know, someone made a good point, though. They were like, you know what? Most of his problems come from the, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it, the unaccredited critics, the ones that don't have journalism degrees, the ones that didn't go to school, the ones that don't write for the actual publications, the ones that write for the blogs and have the YouTube videos and get on Twitter and just firebomb him with horrible things like I have it on good authority that he hates his mother and he's a Randian fascist and he's propagating Nazi propaganda with all of his, those idiots, those flippin' morons, those people that just don't deserve anyone's time of day. That's primarily who goes after him. The actual written critics, you know, like the ones who actually write for real publications, I mean, they have not given him great reviews, you know, and there's that line I heard from his BVS Ultimate Edition commentary track where he looked at the Rotten Tomatoes score and said of the 27%, he said, that is just rude. And yes, I agree. It's very rude. And a lot of those reviews are rude. But, you know, I think the Hollywood, we've said for a while, has understood and respected Zack Snyder as an auteur and as a, you know, a well-respected creator, arguably the least problematic creator, especially with when it comes to like multi-million-dollar licensed properties like DC Comics that exists in the business. So I think that, you know, the Critics Association probably is, you know, tipping their cap to him. Like, there is some legitimate respect there. I do believe some of them have it. Not all of them, but some of them do. So that's going to be interesting. But yeah, we're in Zack Snyder's Justice League mode here, people. We are. And it's not like every other fandom just goes by the wayside. I know everybody's excited about the season finale of WandaVision. I know that people are excited about Falcon and Winter Soldier coming up. Yes, I will be watching both of those. Yes, we know there's MCU content that exists. And yes, we've gotten release dates and schedules for Loki and, you know, the remainder of, you know, what could be released. You know, all the MCU release dates are still holding. Yes, there's tons of other stuff. And other franchises, too. Paramount Plus kicked off today, and I went ahead and I recorded, you know, they were asking for, like, what's your favorite Star Trek line, and I recorded my favorite one, which is a line from The Measure of a Man, which is, like, one of the best episodes of Star Trek, period, let alone Star Trek The Next Generation, the episode where they fought for Data's soul, you know, whether or not he was a sentient being or just the property of Starfleet Command. Great episode, incredible episode, but one of the few gems of season 2. But at any rate, yeah, there's tons of other stuff going on. But we're in Justice League mode here, people. We are. And today, you know, I want to talk about something, you know, a little, not heavier, but just a sentiment that I have adopted with respect to Zack Snyder's Justice League. And it is a fairly new sentiment, because up until recently, I, you know, took more of a diplomatic approach, I guess you could say, to the different versions of the movie that exists. You know, up to this point, it's like, alright, we have the version in 2017, you know, that was released on November 17th of that year that we all saw in the theaters, and, you know, there has been, you know, so many things have come out with respect to the story, and you've got the Vanity Fair piece by Anthony Bresnikan that was released a week or so ago that absolutely breaks it down succinctly, and I've already emailed it to a number of people, you know, in the kind of the general audience and some coworkers and everything to let, you know, so they can get a full picture of it, because if they don't know the story, you've got Sean O'Connell's book, which is now out. Sean O'Connell from Cinema Blend, his book about release the Snyder Cut movement. Like, there, more details are coming out. And as more details come out about just what went into this production, it has caused me to kind of reevaluate my status with respect to these two versions of Justice League that at the moment ostensibly exist. Here's the thing. We live in an age of what would be appropriately called, what I think should appropriately be called, consequence culture. You'll hear the phrase cancel culture a lot from people for a variety of reasons with respect to, you know, it's always with respect to someone's behavior, usually on social media, but also it can be in the public eye, like if a scandal comes out, or if, you know, if an incident from however many years ago, or if a white person did a blackface sketch 10, 15 years ago on SNL, right, and all of a sudden it's like, so-and-so is canceled, so-and-so is over, right, the blah, 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 hashtag blah, blah, blah is over, whoever it is party, right, like that pops up on Twitter all the time, and so that's where this idea of cancel culture and, you know, like, all these people that, you know, the fake woke apologists that are coming out and saying, hey, this person smoked weed in the wrong place when it was still illegal, and they're a horrible person now as a result of it. And listen, a lot of it is due to, like, political ramifications, social media, you know, social ramifications, and definitely, like, sexual harassment or any more serious stuff like that. Yes, there's stuff that's come out with that as well. But here's the thing. Cancel culture doesn't really exist. It's not really a thing. Right? Consequence culture is real. Saying that someone is canceled because, you know, for whatever thing they did however many years ago, I mean, that only, like, there's really not a cancellation that really kind of blows over as long as that particular person that is being canceled walks the straight and narrow, right? If they don't do anything else, if nothing else comes of it, you know, if there are no other allegations, if it's like, If it doesn't go any deeper than whatever that one inciting incident is, then it's over, and that person really isn't canceled. But if it uncovers more things, if it uncovers a pattern of horrific behavior or an awful posturing by that person, well, then it becomes consequence culture, because at that point it's chickens coming home to roost. And this has affected a lot of fandoms, you know, our perception towards actors and our perception towards films as well. There have been a number of people in the last 5 or 6 years that have come under fire as a result of consequence culture, and it has caused us to reevaluate how we look at certain films and how we look at certain people. I'll give you a perfect example. Kevin Spacey. Kevin Spacey, you know, I used to have that debate with my mom about what his best role was. For years, she said his best role was American Beauty, and I argued that it was The Usual Suspects. And then when Netflix threw its hat into the ring, we both agreed that it was House of Cards, right? Well, nowadays you don't have discussions about Kevin Spacey anymore because, well, he's officially canceled, if you will. But it's not canceling, it's consequence. It's consequences. The ramification of the consequences of his actions have come to roost. And he's ostracized. And it's understandably so. When you see the allegations and when you see everything that has come out in the last number of years against him, and when you see the pattern of horrific behavior that he was engaged in, yeah, it's understandable why he's out of work and he is, you know, in a crazy corner, you know, every once in a while popping up with these nut job videos on social media. He's where he's at, and we don't talk about him anymore, right? But that, again, it's a sign of consequence culture. There's a dog barking. Someone's dog is barking. All right. Well, dogs are going nuts outside. At any rate, so, you know, now this causes people, when something like that happens to an actor like Kevin Spacey, it causes people to be like, well, now I can't watch Baby Driver anymore, or I can't look at House of Cards the same way, or I can't watch American Beauty or Usual Suspects. And to that, I've always adopted the opinion of, you know, separating the art from the artist, right? Like, looking at a movie or a show and still treating it for what it is because of, you know, however good it was and whoever else was involved in it, but making certain that I'm not, you know, I'm still holding, like, personally, I'm still going to hold the actor in question accountable for their horrible behavior off screen, right? So it's like, if I watch Baby Driver, you know, I'm watching it in spite of Kevin Spacey. I'm enjoying it in spite of him. And he may have had a great performance, but it's no longer a case where I'm going to trumpet him and be like, oh my goodness, what an incredible actor and an awesome person, because he's not an awesome person. So, but there are a lot of people that are just like, you know, they hit the button, they're like, no, can't watch this movie ever again. Can't watch this show ever again. And that's totally up to you. That's totally your choice. But I've always adopted the position of, I don't do that. I don't want to get rid of the art, because the art can still have some merit. We just went through this, actually, about last month when we reviewed Meteor Man for our patrons over at Squadcast Media. All-star cast for that movie. Incredibly loaded. Bill Cosby's in it. And he doesn't even really have a speaking role, unless you count dog barking as, like, speech, as, like, dialogue. But he's a character that, even though he's not on screen a ton, you can't really remove him from the movie, especially at a critical juncture, like, towards the end of it. But it's Bill Cosby, so it's like, oh, what do you... That's a tough spot. Do I excommunicate the entire Meteor Man movie? Do I excommunicate Robert Townsend and Marla Gibbs and Robert Guillaume and James Earl Jones and everybody else that's in that film because Bill Cosby's in it? No, I do not. I don't do that. And we didn't do that in the review. We brought it up. We talked about it, right? But that's where we're at these days, right? It's like we have to make that choice of whether we're going to separate the art from the artist or not. And to be honest with you, that was how I felt about Justice League until recently. Until recently, I felt that that was a situation where I could separate the art from the artist. And, you know, like, I can look at the transgressions of Joss Whedon and, you know, what has been accused of Geoff Johns and John Berg and Toby Emmerich. And I can say, well, you know what? Other people worked on that movie, and, you know, the ridiculous bastardization of Zack Snyder's vision in 2017, and I can still say, well, you know what, that version is there for anybody that enjoys it. Okay, whatever, it is what it is, right? And I could just try and separate the existence of the movie from all of the badness surrounding it. And I've recently reached a point where I can no longer do that. I have chosen no longer to do that. I feel, as of today, well, it really as of a couple days ago, that movie should be erased. I do think that movie should be erased. The 2017 version of Justice League. I think that it should be completely expunged and stricken from the record the moment that Zack Snyder's Justice League is released on March 18th. And I have reasons. Don't worry. I have logic and I have reasons. And guess what? None of my logic and reasons have anything to do with I am going to like the movie better. It has nothing to do with that subjectivity. It is all subjective. And you don't have to agree with my points. But I will tell you that none of my arguments for why Zack Snyder's Justice League should officially replace the 2017 version, none of them have anything to do with it's a better movie. No, not at all. Because that's completely subjective. It's all subjective. Someone is going to, probably more than a few people, are going to watch Zack Snyder's Justice League on HBO Max on March 18th, and they're going to get on Twitter, and they're going to post their little hot take about how the 2017 version was better. That's going to happen. Whether they believe it or not, it's going to happen. But the thing is, someone will believe it. Someone will actually watch that movie, and they'll actually go, the 2017 version with Mustache Gate, and all of the other bad CGI and the fill in the blanks, like here, you know, like the bad reshoots and the shots that don't match. Like, somebody's going to say that movie is better, and they will legitimately mean it. I may even know some of those people. One of them might even be the co-host of one of my shows on Squadcast Media. That is very likely. That is very possible. But it has nothing to do. My reasoning for this has nothing to do with any of that, because it really doesn't come down to that. I'm a proponent of separating the art from the artist. But I think that this is a different situation with Justice League. I think it's a very different situation. And I'll tell you that, you know, my change of opinion with this really stems from Ray Fisher's most recent tweet. Because here's the thing. You got to understand that this movie, like when we talk about separating the art from the artist, I think that there has to be an exception made, and this is really my primary logic in this belief, there has to be an exception made when the actions of the artist directly affect the art. And that's the thing, you know, and as far as all the other situations regarding, you know, the other horrible behavior from other actors and creatives with respect to movies, like, you know, how many of those situations have actually affected the production of the movie itself? I don't know. I'm sure on some level they have. But then you have to ask the question, did they affect the movie to the level that they affected Justice League? And then that's where you have to get into that category and figure out, okay, like, what is the deal with that? And that's where I think we're at with Justice League. I mean, we already know, you know, you start with the Zack Snyder stuff. You start with the fact that, you know, all of the mess surrounding that, everything that was in that Vanity Fair piece, everything that's in Sean O'Connell's book with respect to, you know, the babysitting that Warner Brothers committed after they didn't trust him, you know, in the wake of the BVS reaction, right? All of that, you know, the constant rewrites and everything that they were squeezing him on in terms of, you got to put humor in here, you got to change this, you got to throw that in there, right? All those changes were already happening as a result of that. And then you go through, you know, the personal family tragedy that the Snyders went through with the death of their daughter, Autumn, right? And all of the horrible, like, moral implications of lying to us and telling us that you were hiring Joss Whedon, you were bringing him on to finish the film when you were actually hiring him to reshoot 70 to 75% of it, and Frankenstein it into a movie that you held on to its original release date because you wanted to make certain that you cleared your bonuses. Like, all of that is, that's like step one. That's like exhibit A with respect to my case here. Like, all of that's awful. All of that is terrible, and all of that affected the existence of that movie. The 2017 movie doesn't exist unless all of that horrible behavior occurs, till all of those terrible things perpetuated by Warner Brothers happens, right? So as awful as Kevin Sugihara was in The Outside, as terrible of a job as Jeff Johns and John Berg did, and as horrible as we've heard Jeff Johns has been with respect to matters of race and apparently being a blaxplainer, telling black people that he knows what's best for black people when he is not even, he is not black. He should not speak on matters that of a culture that he knows nothing of. He is no expert. You should not be looking black people in the eye and going, I know more than you about your own culture. No, that should never be happening, right? So aside from all of that outside stuff, you have a situation where all of that has clearly directly affected this movie, just from the standpoint of the Snyders, just from the standpoint of everything that happened at the beginning of the production, like with Zack Snyder and cast and crew there. And then you get into this Ray Fisher stuff. Then you get into what he put, and for people that don't know this, he posted this 2 days ago, which is really when I kind of wanted to do this episode, but some things came up, and I'm talking about it now. I want to read this whole thing, because this is a rather extensive tweet. For those of you that have read it already, okay, cool, but some people that have listened to this, most notably any family or friends of mine that don't necessarily follow me on Twitter, and aren't like so initiated into this, that have really only heard about the Ray Fisher situation for me, I'm going to read this whole thing. Because this really, to me, is like the straw that broke the camel's back as far as my position with respect to these different versions of Justice League. So this is what Ray Fisher tweeted 2 days ago. He says, at first he said, please read, asking people to please read. And this is what he says word for word, verbatim. I'm going to read this whole thing. He says, prior to the Justice League reshoots of 2017... racially discriminatory conversations were had and entertained on multiple occasions by Warner Brothers Pictures executives Toby Emmerich, Jeff Johns, and John Berg. Had I been aware of those conversations in real time, I would have addressed them in real time. However, it wasn't until the summer of 2020 that individuals who were in those meetings felt comfortable sharing with me what they had witnessed firsthand. When it comes to matters involving race, I always try to give the benefit of the doubt to those who may be ignorant of their own biases. But when you have studio executives, particularly Jeff Johns, saying, we can't have an angry black man at the center of the movie, and then those executives use their power to reduce and remove all black people from that movie, they are no longer entitled to any benefit associated with doubt. Toby, Jeff, and John were not ignorant of their biases. They understood full well that the racist rhetoric they chose to entertain in those meetings was offensive, discriminatory, and unacceptable. Furthermore, they dared not speak those things to me, nor any other black person associated with the film. Instead, they chose the cowardly route of gaslighting, complete with extremely problematic requests, such as asking me to play Cyborg like Quasimodo, and forcing a scene to be reshot so they could highlight the existence of Cyborg's penis. Unfortunately, those were just some of the issues. We now know that the leadership at Warner Brothers Pictures lied to the cast and crew of Justice League and to the world about Zack Snyder picking Joss Whedon to finish the film. The truth will continue to reveal itself, and as it does, there will likely be attempts to shift blame completely onto Kevin Sugihara and Joss Whedon. But make no mistake, Jeff Johns worked intimately with Joss to overhaul the entire Justice League script. And while Jeff was not credited as a co-writer of the film, he was certainly an enforcer of the race-based discrimination that occurred during his conversations with Toby and John. Zack Snyder's Justice League stands as proof of and opposition to that discrimination. I am indebted to the participants of the Justice League investigation. They have put themselves at great risk to share the truth. I owe it to them, I owe it to my peers in this industry, and I owe it to all black people to stay the course. Onward, gratefully, Ray. A greater than E, accountability greater than entertainment. P.S. Walter Hamada owes an apology to all the participants of the Justice League investigation. Quote, it doesn't matter how strong your opinions are, if you don't use your power for positive change, you are indeed part of the problem, end quote. That's from Coretta Scott King. That's how he ended it. All right. So here's the deal. Everybody went nuts. Right? As you can understand, everybody went nuts when they read this on Twitter, because that's new details, right? That's shit that we hadn't heard yet. We hadn't heard about that yet. The idea, we had heard, like this whole thing with Nadria Tucker, this situation, the black female Superman and Lois writer that was dismissed, or I guess her contract expired, whatever it was, and she wasn't asked to return to the show. She has spoken out in the last couple of months about how she was treated by the writer's room and the producers on that show, where she was trying to speak out and, you know, raise concerns about black representation in the show, and she says that she was shot down and she was silenced, and they decided not to bring her back on. And apparently, you know, we found out recently that she participated in the Justice League investigation. And that's really where, you know, so when that happened and she was tweeting about that, that was when Ray Fisher quote tweeted her and talked about, you know, he started to shed light on this idea of Geoff Johns, you know, having conversations with him about Cyborg's genitalia. Which I guess is a thing. And I didn't know this until this came out, but apparently for years, whoa, that was loud. Someone is being kind of ridiculous out in the hallway here. I have loud neighbors. I'm sorry. I have really loud neighbors. It is what it is. At any rate, I didn't know that there was like this there's been this discourse for years about Cyborg's like nether regions. Like, I had no idea that that was even a thing, that that was a debate. The idea that, like, in most iterations, I think even from the beginning, like, there's been a question about whether or not his endowment exists, right? Like, that's a thing, you know, as about his penis. And it's like, wow, okay, social mores, whatever, this was not a debate or a discussion that I even was aware existed. But it is, it's existed, and it's been out there, and apparently Geoff Johns believes that he is the expert on this subject. Geoff Johns, I don't know that he has a stitch of black in him. I don't know that there's anything even remotely about the black culture that he could even profess to be. I know he's, you know, he's from the Detroit area. Like, he's local, I guess. Like, he's a Michigan person. But, like, I don't know anything about the black experience or the black culture that would qualify him to be any type of an expert. He is not black. So this idea that he thinks he can tell Ray Fisher and Adria Tucker that he knows more about black culture than they do is utterly ridiculous and offensive. Like, seriously, why would you do that? Like, that's beyond having biases that you just aren't aware of. That's openly being a jerk. That's openly being a complete arrogant prick about it. Like, seriously, like, how do you do that? How do you tell someone that you know more about their culture than they do? That's insane. And so now we see this tweet, you know, Ray Fisher goes into more detail. Really? So that's why in the Justice League that we got in 2017, you reshot that whole sequence where Victor's on the table being as Silas is trying to save him. If you go back to BVS, go back to the scene, you know, the Justice League Easter egg scene, right? The one that all the haters are all upset about. Because you introduced the Justice League via email. Yeah, it's called Easter eggs, idiots. Right? The second half of the title, the subtitle, is called Dawn of Justice for a reason. Because it's supposed to be the beginnings. Right? You see the Trinity first, then you see everybody else, you morons. I'm sorry, I digress. But in that scene where we saw the video that Silas had recorded of the Mother Box saving Victor, Victor's like, maybe there's the torso and the head and, like, one arm and that's it, right? Like, nothing below his waist is there, is gone, is not there at all, right? It's just gone. Like, there's no flesh. There's nothing. He's got no endowment anymore, right? And I'm using euphemisms. Yes, I am. I'm one of those people that uses euphemisms to talk about penises. Okay, fine, whatever. At any rate, you'd change that in the Justice League reshoots, and you decide to put Ray Fisher in, I don't know, tights or something, like some kind of pajamas, right? Just so that you can make it clear that he still has his dick? Really? Really? And he apparently argued with, Ray Fisher about this. What are you arguing with Ray Fisher about that? Why are you arguing with any black actor about this? If a black actor is telling you that I think culturally it's this way from my personal experience, who are you to be telling him no? Oh, you're a Hollywood producer. Oh, you're the boss. Oh, you're the ones that makes the decisions and signs the checks. Okay, well, you know what? You can be as culturally insensitive as you like, but at the end of the day, you're still an asshole for going along with that. And so that's why you see it's redone that way in the 2017 Justice League film. And it's like, oh, awful. And as far as his, as what he's saying, as far as what Fisher's saying about them removing all the black people out of the movie, oh, that's very true. That's 100% true. Because not only was Ray Fisher's, not only was Cyborg's role, like, chopped up, and maybe we only see a fourth of his truly recorded performance in the 2017 version of Justice League, not only is that the case, but on top of that, Karen Bryson, the actress who played his mother, Eleanor, completely removed from the film, and so was Kiersey Clemons, who was cast and filmed as Iris West. A black Iris West, which, again, I've mentioned before, you know, that stems from, you know, the tradition that Candace Patton started when she was cast as Iris West in the Flash TV series back in 2014, and it has created a paradigm where the comics have made Iris biracial, and Zack Snyder followed in those footsteps, made Iris black for his Justice League film. Filmed full sequences that I've seen previs, and you know, I think we've started to see some finished parts of that in some of the TV spots and the trailers that have come out for Zack Snyder's Justice League, completely removed. Completely removed out of the film. And of course they gutted Silas's performance, you know, Joe Morton's performance out of it. So yeah, the black people were systematically, like, removed from the film. So we're talking about a case where this movie not only had, like, you know, the heart and soul and the guts, all the lying and all the deceitful practices surrounding the tragedy of the Snyders, you know, bringing Joss Whedon in problematically and all the trouble and all the chaos that he caused during the reshoots, allegedly, all that happened. Now you have this. You've got racism. A film affected openly by racism. Black people removed from the film forcibly. We can't have an angry black man at the center of our Justice League movie. What? Seriously? And you want me to respect this movie any further? I already have plenty of technical issues about it, starting with that dumbass hope is like your car keys scene at the beginning. And that awful CGI that I knew was awful from day one, but was in cognitive delusion mode and tried to ignore it as best as I could, but I honestly, I couldn't. I knew from day one it was awful. I just tried to ignore it. Seriously. But that's a whole thing there. Like, I already have my issues with that. I already have my issues with, you know, something is definitely bleeding and, you know, I don't not. You know, all of Batman's silly lines and stupid jokes that they put back into there and just, you know, all of that. I already have my issues with all of that, right? That's all on a subjective level, even though definitely on a technical level, there's, you know, there's reshoot shots that don't match what Snyder originally shot, and there's story beats that don't match. There's things that are placed in there that don't make any sense, like the Russian family and Superman saving a building of civilians that we didn't even know existed until we see him flying with the building, right? There's a ton of other stuff. Like, apart from that, there's the stuff with the Snyders and now racism. Oh, but blatant racism alleged with this. And I'm sorry, you know, I'm sure there are plenty of people out there who are like, well, we still haven't heard the Whedon side of the story. We haven't heard Jeff Johns' side of the story. We haven't heard John Berg's or Toby Emmerich's side of the story. Well, they're not saying anything. They're not speaking up. Vanity Fair reached out to all of them for comment. They denied it. They're being quiet. I wonder why. Why are they being quiet? If they're being attacked like this, if Ray Fisher is constantly coming at them with tweets about this, why aren't they stepping up? Why aren't they defending themselves? Because they're just letting Warner Brothers do it? Well, Warner Brothers is doing a crap job. Because Warner Brothers wants to throw Joss Whedon and John Berg under the bus. And whatever protection of Jeff Johns that they have is like, okay, it's not like he's going out there and doing all. I mean, the most that he's doing is they're putting him in these specials, like the Superman and Lois special, which he really shouldn't have been in. That was a bad look. That was a bad look. I'm sorry, Warner Brothers, DC Comics. That was a bad look. He should not have been in that special. Plenty of people who were interested in Superman and Lois based on how much of like Man of Steel that trailer looked. He's the last face they wanted to see in that special. You should have known better. That was a dumb move. That was a really tone-deaf move. It was just as tone-deaf as having him in, it was more tone-deaf than having him in the Stargirl panel on day two of DC Fandom. Only reason I say that is because Stargirl was his creation. It was very, you know, the very personal story. He wrote the character for his sister who died. Like, that I could get on some level, even though it was still creepy. still really creepy how, like, Leah Thompson and Breck Basinger and everybody else was, like, treating him. Like, he didn't say a whole lot, but that was just, it's a weird look. But now you look at this. You look at this whole situation, and it's like, how can I look at this movie and be fair to it anymore at all? And again, this has nothing to do with the fact that I am more than likely going to enjoy Zack Snyder's Justice League far more than I did that film. This has nothing to do with that. My argument for this is there are moral and ethical implications for why the 2017 version of Justice League should no longer see the light of day. Why it shouldn't be sold anymore, why it shouldn't be made available for VOD, and at the very least, why HBO Max should take it off of their service. Now, HBO Max, you know, when BVS Ultimate Edition was made available on HBO Max, they replaced the theatrical version with it. The only way that you can watch Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice on HBO Max is if you watch the Ultimate Edition, which is 3 hours and 2 minutes long. The theatrical cut is gone. History. I'm sure somewhere you can still purchase it, and you can still get it digitally, and I'm sure TNT and TBS still show it. But if you want to watch it on HBO Max, it's got to be the Ultimate Edition, which is, you know, really the best version of the movie because nothing's missing. And there are whole plot lines and threads and character development that is put back into it. Right? Well, they need to do the exact same thing with Justice League. The day that Zack Snyder's Justice League comes out as a Max original on HBO Max, they should remove the 2017 version from the service for moral and ethical and cultural reasons. Has nothing to do with which one is the better movie or not. That is subjective. I told you, someone's going to like the 2017 version more than the version we're going to get on March 18th. They're going to be people that say that, and they're going to mean it. You know, not all of them are going to be trolls. A lot of them will be. We know this. A lot of them will be trolls, and a lot of them are going to buy into that hatred. They've already bought into it already. But somebody out there is going to subjectively like the 2017 version more than this version that we're about to get. This has nothing to do with that. This has everything to do with the fact that the transgressions committed behind the scenes and directly affected this film. The treatment of Zack Snyder and his family, what Joss Whedon did when he came on board with the reshoots, and now what Ray Fisher is alleging here, with racism, open racism perpetrated by these Warner Brothers executives, and the film directly affected by that. Go watch that movie. Right? And it'll be very interesting to see people compare and contrast, like my sister Rachel, who you know, indicated she wanted to do the compare and contrast. It's going to be very interesting which film is going to feel more diverse to her, a black woman, right? The one from 3.5 years ago that really has no black people in it, or the one that puts the two black women that were erased from the movie back in? How about that? How's that going to look? And yeah, this is definitely personal for me as a black man. I have to look at this and go, what the hell? What the hell? And this is nothing new, guys. This is old Hollywood rearing its ugly head again. Hollywood producer, this phrase that he says was spoken about how, I'm trying to, let me pull it up again so that I can read exactly. We can't have an angry black man at the center of the movie. You know how many Hollywood executives have spoken that exact phrase over the last 50 years? Are you kidding me? Come on now. That is straight up. That is out of the old Hollywood playbook. All those old, white, crusty executives, those men that have, you know, imposed their patriarchy and everything on the movie industry, yeah, they've been saying crap like that for years. This is nothing new. This is just new in terms of, well, now it's affected this particular DC Comics film, and it's affecting Ray Fisher, and it's affecting Nadria Tucker, and it's affecting others involved. It's certainly affected Karen Bryson and Kiersey Clemons, who didn't get their, you know, credit for their roles in the 2017 film because they were erased from them. They're about to get their credit back because they've been placed back into the film, and we know this for a certainty. We know that that's the case. We already know that without even having seen the film. So how am I supposed to react to that? Yeah, as a black man, in looking at this in the industry, I've seen too much of this. Too much of this has happened in Hollywood for decades. Too much of this has been allowed to go on. And it's beyond just having biases that you don't... It's beyond not knowing any better. These decisions are being actively made in favor of racism. in favor of, hey, we can't have this at the center of our film. We can't have that at the center of our film. This is anti-diversity. For all the people that have argued to me about diversity for diversity's sake, there shouldn't be diversity for diversity's sake, I will still argue to you morons that that is not a thing. There's no such thing as diversity for diversity's sake. Diversity exists. The planet is not all white. Sorry. And, you know, in the next couple of decades, it won't even be majority white. That's another conversation for another time. But the reality of the situation is when you sit down to watch a movie, you want to see something that is close to an actual demographic and ethnic representation of the world you live in. And it seems like these Hollywood producers and these Hollywood executives have done everything in their power over the last several decades to make certain that that's not the case as much as possible. And here we have another one. So this is not a case where I can look at Justice League from 2017 and call it separating the art from the artist. I can't do that. I choose not to do that because the art was directly affected. The art was directly affected in terms of how, you know, what was done with the Snyders, what the behavior that Whedon allegedly perpetrated, and now these allegations of racism. Which, again, there's evidence to back this up, right? I mean, the stuff with Geoff Johns aside, okay, you know, that can be whatever, but Nadria Tucker certainly stands by that, and she participated in the Justice League investigation, so she's certainly somebody that is akin and is admitting, hey, no, he does act like this on set. But beyond that, the black people were removed from the film. They were. They were removed from the film. That's objectively true. That's factual. If you watch the 2017 version of Justice League, you won't find Karen Bryson in it at all. You won't find Kiersey Clemons in it at all. They were both part of principal photography. When you see them placed back into the film for Zack Snyder's Justice League, it's going to be an eye-opener. At least it should be an eye-opener. How can I take the 2017 film seriously anymore, knowing that all of this is swirling around it? I can't. Not from a moral position, not from an ethical position, and certainly not from a cultural position. So in my opinion, Warner Media should do what I consider to be the right thing and replace Justice League 2017 with Zack Snyder's Justice League 2021. Replace it. Flat out replace it. At the very least, and I know it's a business, right? I know that the odds are that, you know, all the contracts and deals are in place and you're still going to be able to buy the 2017 version on VOD, right? I know people were excited about, and I was excited about the fact that, you know, it looked like it had been taken off of Google Play. And then, of course, you know, others had to comment, no, it's still there. And it's like, okay, let us have some fun for a second, guys. Come on, what the hell? We can be excited for just a little bit, right? You know, so more than likely, the 2017 film is going to still be available for purchase on VOD or at Google Play or iTunes or whatever, right? You're probably still going to see it broadcast on TNT and TBS, right? It's still probably going to, that's probably still going to happen. Those existing agreements, probably still the case. But at the very least, take it off of HBO Max. Replace it with Zack Snyder's Justice League on HBO Max, at the very least. Again, moral, ethical, and cultural reasons. I could not care less if you like the 2017 version better than what we're going to see on March 18. That has nothing to do with this whatsoever. That is not the argument that I am making. Don't claim that I am making that argument. It has nothing to do with which one is the better film at all. What I'm basing this on is a version of the film that came out 3.5 years ago that was touched by deceit and treachery and abuse and racism. All four of those things, allegedly and reportedly, affected and created the film that we saw 3.5 years ago. And the existence of this film that we're about to get on March 18th counteracts all of that, heals all of that, fixes all of those horrific issues. Because all three of those things, deceit, treachery, racism, and abuse, those are not good things. Those are not things that should be defended. Sorry, Scott Mendelson, you shouldn't be getting on Twitter and defending the fact, you know, the Quasimodo line. He got up on Twitter, Scott Mendelson, who is just not a good person at all, writes for Forbes, and you know, he loves to be wishy-washy and tell jokes and act like he's innocent. He plays victim all the damn time for Forbes, but he has said some nasty stuff, and Zack Snyder has actually fired back at him for a number of things, right? You know, he gets out there and wrote a piece with, like, defending the Quasimodo line. Oh, that's a line that they talk about. That it's a common Hollywood line. Scott Mendelson, silence, quiet. That is not your culture. Don't go down the Jeff Johns route and become a blaxplainer yourself. At least have that decency. There are other decencies you don't have. At least have that one. Seriously. That's ridiculous. I mean, does it surprise me that he's a blaxplainer? No. Doesn't surprise me that at all. But you just wish you wouldn't see it. You know. But it's just, it's too much of a mess. It's too much of a mess. Those types of things affecting the production of that first version, the version that we got in 2017, I think those are more than enough reasons that you should just, you know, call it quits, you know, push it aside and go, well, we're affecting a mulligan. Zack Snyder's Justice League is our mulligan. As far as Warner Media is concerned, it's our mulligan. Warner Brothers, it's your stench. It's your stain. Because you won't live it down. Or like you won't acknowledge it. You won't, you know, own up to it. You have no accountability. Toby Emmerich and Walter Hamada and everyone involved, there's no accountability for your idiotic malfeasance. I love using that word, malfeasance. You have no accountability for your actions with that whatsoever. None. None at all. And because of that, you'll never live this down. This will be a stain, a hex, on your studio until those of you that were responsible for it are fired and are gone. Like, out of the building. No longer making any executive or editorial decisions on any DC movies or any Warner Brothers movies, for that matter, going forward. Which is funny, because when you look at other DC directors, and this can go into my argument, other DC directors that have made films since Justice League, a number of them have already made the indicate. James Wan in particular, and also I think Patty Jenkins has said, we're following Zack's original plan. We're going by what his original vision. We're really not following the 2017 film at all. Like, whatever bastardization you guys put in the theaters, we're not following that. So we're in a position where Zack Snyder's Justice League is still going to line up. You know, in theory, we'll have to wait. We'll have to watch and see. But in theory, it still lines. Zack Snyder's Justice League will still line up with where Aquaman begins, right? It'll still line up with what happens in Wonder Woman 1984. Like, that won't affect everyone. Wonder Woman 1984 is in its own little world and, you know, did whatever it did. But, like, Shazam even, right? David Sandberg, with all manner of Easter eggs, you know, that he threw in there from BVS and from Man of Steel. Like, he went back to those movies. He didn't touch on anything from Justice League. I mean, yeah, there's an Aquaman shirt, and yeah, there's some references to Wonder Woman, but you don't need that to be from Justice League. So it just feels like DC directors going forward don't hold, you know, they don't think of or regard the 2017 version of the film in the first place with their productions. And if they're really leaving it open-ended so that nothing reverts back to that. And I've watched these movies. I've seen Aquaman multiple times. I see nothing in it that says, oh, I need to watch the 2017 version of Justice League. There's nothing in Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn that says, I must watch Justice League. There's nothing in Shazam that says, I have to watch Justice League. There's nothing in Wonder Woman 1984, especially since it's a prequel, since it happens decades before Justice League, that tells me I have to watch the 2017 version. And I would reason to guess, especially with Ezra Miller's involvement, I would reason to guess that there's not going to be anything there's not going to be anything in Andy Muschietti's Flash film that's going to make me go, oh, I need to watch the 2017 version of Justice League, right? So if your directors and your creatives are already, like, treating it out of sight, out of mind, if they're already only looking at Zack's original vision when they put their own movies together, that's all the more reason you should just dismiss it. That's all the more reason you should just let it go the way of E.T. the video game. Go bury it in the desert or something like that. Whatever. And I know from a business standpoint, they're probably going to still want to get money from it, because all the haters and all the angry people that like the 2017 version more than Zack Snyder's Justice League, well, there's still an avenue for them to watch it. There's still an avenue for them to buy it. But if Warner Media wants to do the right thing from a moral standpoint, an ethical standpoint, and a standpoint of respecting culture and being anti-racist, then they'll replace Zack Snyder's they'll replace Justice League with Zack Snyder's Justice League. They'll replace the 2017 version with Zack Snyder's Justice League on HBO Max, at the very least. At the very least, they will do that. And I hope they do. Remains to be seen. We'll find out soon enough. We will. We are not, like I said, we're 2 weeks away. 2 weeks away from the premiere. Well, 2 weeks away from the worldwide premiere. A number of people, as of today, were invited to the virtual premiere. So, I mean, that's exciting. Some of our more esteemed mutuals are going to get to see it 3 days early. Awesome. Cool. And I do trust that from the people I've seen get invites, I do trust that they will all keep their mouths shut for 3 days while the rest of us wait until the 18th to officially see it. But cool for them. Great for them. But yeah, that's where I'm at. Like, and it's a unique situation where, again, the transgressions and the old Hollywood practices that, you know, usually we can separate from the art. This is one of those cases where I don't think we can. I don't think we can separate it from the art. And I think, again, if Warner Media wants to do the right thing here, they should replace the 2017 version of Justice League with Zack Snyder's Justice League. Plain and simple. It should be the only one. It should be the only version of Justice League that exists going forward. Once it comes out, I really feel that way. Because it just, you can't get around how much all those awful things affected it. You know, you just can't. And again, if the other side was willing to come out and defend themselves and talk about, you know, how this is all a lie and it wasn't as bad as Ray Fisher is saying, well, they've had ample opportunity. He's been saying this stuff for, you know, since last July. And the most that we've heard from anyone outside of a prepared Warner Brothers statement is John Berg saying, I think his problem was he didn't want to say booyah, which was horrifically tone deaf at the time and still tone deaf now compared, you know, like when stacked against Fisher's allegations. That's the most we've heard from these invested parties in terms of defending themselves. So, I mean, what gives? Why are they being so quiet? Do they have something to hide? Seems like they might. And listen, this isn't a court of law. This is a court of public opinion on this show. It's a fan show. And fandoms, you know, we have court of public opinion. It doesn't look like Joss Whedon, John Berg, and Jeff Johns, and Toby Emmerich, and even Walter Kamada. It doesn't look like any of those men are innocent. It looks like they're guilty. They have not defended themselves appropriately. They haven't really come out to defend themselves. And Warner Brothers' PR responses to what has been alleged of them have been laughable. Absolutely laughable. And the people that buy into what Warner Brothers is, you know, the people that like, oh, this doesn't look good for Ray Fisher. I can't help you on that one. And I saw it, you know, you see people comment on Twitter like, oh, this doesn't look very good for Ray Fisher at all. It's like, oh, you guys just buy into whatever these corporate guys will tell you at all, right? Like, you're the ones that buy into the corporate mentality and you'll defend a corporation over a person in a heartbeat. Yeah, good luck with that. I'm sure that will, you know, keep you warm at night. I'm sure that will put food on your table, trusting corporations like that. No, it's silly. You can see right through it. Anybody paying attention can see exactly what their PR machine is doing and what they've been doing to try and discredit Ray Fisher for the last number of months. And again, you know why I believe him. You know why I'm inclined to believe him. It's not just because I'm a person of color. It's also because I've heard his story before. Again, the sentence that he uttered here, we can't have an angry black man at the center of the movie. Old Hollywood has said that hundreds, maybe even thousands of times with spec scripts and projects that were pitched to them. Guarantee it. I've heard it before with respect to other films way back when, right? So it's nothing new as far as that goes. And that's why I'm inclined to believe Ray Fisher on this, because it's par for the course for old Hollywood. It just is. Whether people want to believe that or not, and maybe a lot of you are young and you just have never seen it, do some digging, do some homework. Go look at some films. Like look at some of your favorites and see how many of them have had issues just like this or similar to this before. They're out there, man. The information is there. You can find it. Google it. Trust me. It's out there. Believe me. You'll see testimony. You'll see people talking about it. You'll see admissions, right? It's not everybody lying. There's smoke here. And there's smoke around Hollywood with this, and there's fire down below. No question about it. So, at any rate, I think that's going to do it for this particular episode of the Flightcast. I wanted to talk about this a couple of days ago, and I know that we're, like, in the middle of, like, some really awesome Justice League marketing now. You know, some really cool stuff came out today, that new Batman clip, and we're going to get these character clips. And look, we're inside 2 weeks. We've got plenty of happy stuff to talk about. There's no question about it. But I did want to talk about this just for a second and really give my two cents and my thoughts on this particular perspective with respect to this particular film. So thank you very much, as always, for listening to this show. I do greatly appreciate all of you that take the time out to listen to my solo podcast here. As always, please do not hesitate to let me know what any of you think. I can be reached by email at ray@theflightcast.com. Please send emails. Send emails. I would love to read emails on the show. Listener feedback is awesome to read on the show. But of course, I am also on Twitter, at The Flightcast, which many of you have responded to me at The Flightcast. Thank you very much for those. Maybe I should read some tweets. Maybe I should read some really awesome tweets on the show. That might not be a bad idea. That's probably a good idea. I'll do that as well. But I'm there, and I have the Facebook page as well. I've got Instagram. And of course, this show and my other blog posts can be found at theflightcast.com. So thanks a lot, guys. Take care. Stay safe out there. T-minus 2 weeks till the glory of Zack Snyder's Justice League on HBO Max. Be there, be square, March 18th. All right. Take it easy, guys. See you later.